The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Care and protection for the whole family's health at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
Now, look, in terms of, we were talking earlier about surveying the damage that's been done over the last year. One thing we keep hearing alarm bells sounding about from various different quarters right now is what seems to be quite a sharp rise in eating disorders, and also that it's presenting in much younger and younger people. Harriet Parsons is the Training and Development Manager with Bodywise, which is the Eating Disorders Association of Ireland. Harriet, welcome.
Thanks, Brendan.
Now, Harriet, just for full transparency, we will say I have a family connection with you. That's not why you're here. I had nothing to do with booking you or suggesting you or anything else. But we just get that out of the way, okay, for complete transparency. Now,
okay.
Is COVID causing a rise in eating disorders? And if so, why is it?
It absolutely is. When we reflect on the lockdown since March 2020, you know, hospitals are reporting, like Temple Street reported a 66% rise in hospital admissions. Crumlin, I think, reported a threefold increase across the services as well. There has been a 60% rise in referrals, a 43% increase in assessments. And on Bodywise Support Services, our online support groups had 110% increase in attendance. Our helpline was up 48%. And the family support program, the PILAR program that I have taken online now, has 121% increase in people attending it. So I started one last Wednesday, Brendan, and there was like 252 signups for
Okay, right. What are the factors at play here, do you think?
Well, I think a number of things happened. So I think that when we think back to last March, when lockdown came, you know, we were all thrown into a situation where we didn't know exactly what was happening. And there was a lot of fear and uncertainty about, you know, what was this kind of changed world we were now kind of catapulted into. And for people with eating disorders, you know, they don't, they find change incredibly difficult and change to routine really difficult. So what you had was fear and anxiety coupled with this unknown, you know, what's going to happen. And in that unknown, I think what happened is this huge kind of should came down on us all. And it created like a perfect storm for people who have an eating disorder already, but also for people who were vulnerable. You know, young people who maybe had a tendency towards being anxious or kind of needing rules and all or nothing thinking, that they found that really difficult. And so what we found, I mean, if you reflect on it, what everybody did was kind of scrambled for how are we going to cope with this new routine. And we suddenly had banana bread making and sourdough starters and people kind of running, you know, we heard it earlier, and people running kind of marathons within their 5K. And everybody thinking, oh, well, what, how can I make the most of this time? And that, to a person with an eating disorder, is like this unknown quantity, and it feels like a huge should. So they feel, well, I should be doing all of these things. And how do I compare myself? And am I doing enough? And it always comes down to, you know, not feeling good enough and not feeling like I'm okay. And so what you basically had then was this perfect storm where eating disorder symptoms, so that's the distorted thinking and the disordered behaviors, be that restricting food, controlling food, or binge eating or purging, they all were intensified. You had people who were kind of coming at the tail end, you know, recovering,
okay,
fearing relapse. And so it was just across the board, it's been really difficult.
Okay. In terms of people coming to it for the first time then, we're obviously, the teen years seem to be the difficult years, but we've been hearing now reports of younger and younger children presenting. Has that situation got worse in the last year as well?
Yeah, I would definitely have heard of younger and younger people. So in the last couple of years, the average age of onset for anorexia and bulimia came down. So it's now 13 to 18. But what I'm hearing on the family support program is lots of parents of 12, 11, 10, 9-year-olds. You know, people who have kids who are very conscious of, you know, of themselves, of how they look, of their bodies, in a world where there's a lot of uncertainty, and in a world where kind of image is king as well. So, okay. And there's lots of healthy eating messages, and, you know, exercise is good for your mental health, and all of those messages, which to a vulnerable person isn't always a great thing. And
so that's the difference here, is it that, like, you know, for most people, yeah, they would be seen as kind of fairly positive messages to stay healthy or whatever. But there's a certain there's a certain bunch of people that has a different effect on. Yes,
exactly. Yeah. So, you know, there's that. So you could, you know, do a healthy, you know, healthy eating message to 100 people, and there might be one person who has vulnerabilities, and those vulnerabilities would be a tendency towards being anxious, quite perfectionist, quite high achieving, a tendency to all or nothing thinking, and really a kind of fundamental low self-esteem or not feeling good enough, which is often masked by high achieving. So it's not really obvious to the outside world.
And in terms of it being obvious to the outside world, then what are parents noticing, or what are the warning signs they should be looking for?
Well, I suppose there's a couple of things. So there's change in eating habits. So what parents are reporting noticing would be kids suddenly becoming quite strict about what they're eating and when they're eating. So, you know, real rules around that. Again, also exercise comes into that, you know, rules around exercising. I must exercise. I have to exercise. I'm walking with every member of the family, that kind of thing. So what you notice is changes to eating habits, but you also notice changes to the person's personality. So where they might have been carefree and bubbly and happy, they now seem to be, you know, introverted, sad, frightened, anxious. So it's not just about the food parts. It's also about how the person is feeling and whether they're engaging socially, whether they're, you know, coming out of their room and eating with the family, whether they're in contact with their friends. So it's all of those different aspects.
And of course, there are a lot of things that could have got lost or could have been disguised in the last year as well, aren't they? You know, And Harriet, then, you see, obviously, there's a difficult conversation to be had there, isn't there? And most parents probably aren't really qualified to have that conversation, are they?
About when they're worried about
presumably you need some form of a confrontation or something then, do you?
Yeah. And so that's really difficult. And that's actually, I spoke about that on Wednesday at our at the family support program. And what I think is really important about that conversation is, before you have it, to understand that an eating disorder is a coping mechanism. So the person is engaging in the eating disorder because in some way it makes them feel safer and it makes them feel like they can manage. I would say it's a functional illness. It has a function. So it does something for the person. And so we don't easily let go of the things that make us feel better. So when you are approaching someone, or when you want to have that conversation with someone, they're not going to naturally agree with you and say, yes, yes, there's something wrong with me, I must change. Resistance is to be expected. The person will resist it, and that's fine. The nature of an eating disorder is that it's ambivalent. The person might inside themselves acknowledge that they're not okay, but might not be able to say that out loud to you. So that conversation is about expressing to the person that you're worried about, you know, concrete reasons why you're worried about them, but then not focusing on what they're doing, so on what they're eating or exercising or whatever it might be, but focusing on how they're feeling. And if you focus on how they're feeling, they're much more likely to listen to you. And if you try not to do it all at once, so think of the conversation as a number of conversations where really what you're trying to do is say, I'm worried about you, I don't know what's going on. I don't have the answer, but let's try and have a conversation about it. Let's try and figure out, you know, is there something that we can do to help this, to help you feel better? And so you're doing it in a very gentle way. And you're not kind of overloading them with, you know, you're not well, I have to take you to the doctor. You have to kind of do it in increments and in steps.
Okay. But presumably, excuse me, on the other hand, you're in a race against time here. You don't want this thing to get bedded in because it's a very hard thing to get back out of. So is the idea that you want to get the person professional help as soon as possible?
Yeah. So eating disorders are incredibly serious. They have the highest mortality rate of any psychiatric illness. So, you know, they're not a phase. Somebody doesn't grow out of it. They're really, they are serious. So if you are worried about somebody, it is really important that they get properly assessed. You know, the usual first port of call is the GP. And the GP, you know, can assess lots of different aspects, and then they will make a referral onto more specialized services, you know, depending on the risk level. But that is really important. You need to know what you're dealing with. And a person, you know, an eating disorder is really complicated and really serious, and it straddles lots of different areas of medicine as well. So you need professionals and clinicians who know what they're doing. And early intervention is the key part to assure kind of long-lasting, sustained recovery, because it is absolutely possible to recover from an eating disorder. You know, it's not something that a person is going to have to live with for their whole life, but they do need help to get there.
Okay. And should a person be prepared for the fact that they're going to get resistance every step along the way there?
Yeah. And that's why it's so important to support the families. So families need support because it can feel relentless at times, and everything that they have kind of done up until now, you know, to support their kids and make them feel happy, suddenly might not be the right thing. And suddenly they say something and it's distorted in the person's head and they react badly. And so parents, often their confidence can kind of be in their boots, and they can kind of be questioning whether they're doing anything right. So they really need a lot of support. They need a lot of psychoeducation. They need a lot of learning, you know, skills around how to manage different obstacles, different aspects of the eating disorder. And that's really what we focus on in our family support program. And there's loads of information about that on our website. The HSE also developed an app that has buckets of information for people, especially in those early days, to know what you're dealing with, to know how to do the right things at the right time, and to kind of get you on the road to recovery.
Okay, what's that app called, Harriet?
It's the HSE Self-Care Eating Disorder app. And if you go onto the BodyWise website, there's a page there where you can download it.
Okay, and you're bodywise.ie, and that's WHYS. Listen, you mentioned there, pandemic aside, you mentioned the kind of background noise of the culture and the kind of messages it sends and everything. You think social media is a problem here?
Well, I think that social media is part of all of that. That for vulnerable people, it can be really destructive. So I don't think that social media in itself is something that is a problem. But I think that for a vulnerable person who doesn't have a very strong sense of self, what happens often on social media, you know, putting out, you know, selfies, for example, or something like that, is that the reason for putting stuff out there is slightly different to a person who doesn't ever question whether they're okay or not. And that reason is, I put a picture of myself out there because I want to know, am I okay? And does the rest of the world think I am acceptable? And so it's in that putting my sense of self in the hands of the external world, that's going to make me feel better about myself. That's where the problem lies. Yeah. Because they're quite all or nothing or biased towards the negative, you know, if one person doesn't like it, they focus on that rather than all the likes.
You're on a loser there. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you're not a lover of fitness trackers for young kids either.
No. Well, personally, no, I'm not. I think the idea of kids kind of measuring themselves against an external marker like that, that's very objective. I don't really think there's any need to bring that into the conversation. Health is one thing, and it's, you know, they're very clear parameters, but that kind of daily measuring and measuring, did I do well enough today? How many steps did I do today? Or that kind of thing. I think it's potentially a problem for people, again, who are vulnerable. And you see, you might not know that somebody is vulnerable until it starts to be a problem. So, as a rule of thumb, I wouldn't have kids having them.
Okay. Briefly, we should mention as well, because people do forget it, that boys increasingly suffering from eating disorders as well.
Oh, absolutely. Boys and men. Yeah. And often boys and men feel like the conversation doesn't include them. But I absolutely include them in my head when I'm talking about eating disorders. I don't really differentiate. About 25% of cases of anorexia and bulimia would be male. And it's 50-50 when it comes to binge eating disorder. And we certainly know from our work in schools that we would be getting all the time more and more requests from all boys' schools. And boys more and more are feeling pressure to conform, to have a good image. And they are feeling the pressure that, you know, you talk about that social media pressure. They are feeling that just as much as girls. And, you know, they feel that need to be whatever, fit or whatever. I don't know what their ideal is at the moment, but they feel it just as much as girls do. It's a real problem as well.
OK, Harriet, an interesting sidebar to this is I happen to know that your interest in this field stems from you spent time in Russia as a ballet dancer, and it was what you saw there kind of got you interested, wasn't it?
Yeah. So when I was 16, Brendan, as you know, I went to study at the Perm Ballet School in Russia. And after graduating there, went on to work with Moscow City Ballet. And what I found kind of fascinating in the school, but also more so in the company, was, you know, I was in the corps de ballet, you know, we were, 25 girls in the corps de ballet. And, you know, the director would come backstage afterwards and would make these blanket comments about how we looked and about our size and, you know, how we were in our costumes. And you could see that there were some people who would totally take it to heart and who would be dieting all the time and who would, you know, never be eating and all of that. And then there were other people that it was like water off a duck's back, and they would, you know, roll their eyes when they came off stage and it wouldn't affect them at all.
And what did they have, Harriet?
Yeah, well, that's the question. That was what interests me. You know, what makes a person resilient? What's the difference? And what I'm learning and what I see from, you know, I've been working in BodyWise since 2004, is that there is this resilient sense of self. So for people who have a really kind of assured sense of who they are, they are less vulnerable to things like eating disorders. They don't need that external affirmation that they are okay. They fundamentally know that they are. And so I think that, you know, that is a really, really kind of important thing that we need to think about in our young people and in ourselves as well.
Yeah. And I wonder then, Harriet, like, are we trying to protect our kids from everything these days, make everything okay for them and all that? And are we not fostering that kind of resilience in them?
Well, I think that it's a combination of things, Brendan. So I think it's when, I think that kids are born with their own personality type. And you see that, you know, when you have a family with lots of different kids, you know, there will be one who's, you know, who just seems more resilient than the others. But absolutely, I think, you know, that kids, as they grow up, they need to experience challenges. They need to experience difficult situations. They need to figure out how to manage friendships and relationships. They need to figure out how to manage failure, how to manage, you know, not being picked or, you know, not getting what they want. And throughout childhood, as they learn those things, they're building up a way of coping with their life, so that they will be kind of ready when they go out into the world. And actually, you know, Brendan, I often think of recovery as from an eating disorder as kind of a process of becoming an adult, that that when a person is recovering, they actually have to live their recovery. So they have to live their life. So they have to go back into their lives. They have to go back to school, back to college, back to work. And they have to start to come across these challenges and manage them without using the eating disorder as a way of coping, to know what to do.
All right. Yeah. Listen, Harriet, that was really interesting and all really clear. Thank you very much. And the Bodywise helpline number is 01271 7906. Is that manned now at the moment, Harriet?
The helpline number is actually 01.
Sorry. Yeah.
01210 7906.
Okay. And there's someone there now, is there?
Well, it's open for another little bit, but the times are on the website, but also our email support is open all the time. And that's alex@bodywise.ie. So alex@bodywise.ie. And our website has information about, you know, there's a treatment guide and there's information about our free family support program, and all of our support services are free to attend.
Okay, Harriet Parsons, thank you very much. Let's take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.